Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined by the BBC's very special, super duper film critic, but not critic, Ali Plum.
Hey! Yeah, hello, hi, yes, I'm Radio 1's in-house film nerd and geeky interviewer guy. If you don't know me at all, that's fine, I'm not offended, I get it. You might recognise me from being on certain TikTok videos or Instagram reels that get shared over and over because
that's
it's
right.
Me next to Jennifer Lawrence or, I don't know, Millie Bobby Brown or...
Who's the last person you interviewed was Millie Bobby Brown?
She was one of the more recent ones before I flew to Tokyo to hang out with this lovely man for a couple of weeks, as you may have heard on a previous podcast. And I also spoke to the cast of Bridgerton. Are you into Bridgerton?
Oh, I don't know what Bridgerton is.
It's a Netflix show about bodices and being ripped.
Cool.
Bodices being ripped. The men are also ripped. Basically, it's a sexy show and bodices are involved.
Bridgerton.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a massive hit.
You are the film guy. You know everything about films. Yeah. And this episode, last episode, we talked with Ali about his two-week trip to Japan and all the awesome hijinks he got up to, and including a bit that we did together in the Next Gen Trail. Go back and check that out if you want to hear about that, and also get some tips potentially for your trip to Japan. Ali had some indispensable tips, like...
No, I didn't.
Like, take your shoes off or something.
There's one I didn't write down. Some pavements, if not most pavements, are just lines on the road.
Yeah.
And if you're jet-lagged, you may not realise what they are.
I think that's just a special Ali Plum problem. But
into traffic, it's an Ali Plum problem.
But this is the exciting one, because I've come here to talk about... I brought you here to talk about films, right?
And we had a very long conversation about Saltburn halfway up a mountain.
We did talk about Saltburn a lot, yeah. I don't have many friends who are that into film, let alone your level, which is like encyclopedia level knowledge. And we're going to talk about Japanese TV shows recently, such as Shogun, and a few films, but probably it will be quite a broad sort of episode about film in general. So the gloves are off, Plum's out. That could be a good name for your podcast if and when you quit the BBC. Anyway, not going to happen.
When they have... I mean, the search engine optimization for Plum's Out may not give me the audience I want, or maybe it will give me the audience I deserve. Interestingly enough, one of the reasons why I've long wanted to go to Japan was because, obviously, Lost in Translation and these big movies that sort of loom large in why do people go to Tokyo, but also because I love Studio Ghibli, as a lot of people do. And the first thing I did, the first day I was properly awake and up on my feet...
Went to the museum,
and I was grateful to you because you helped me get the ticket. And you might know this.
Which I didn't realise was so hard to acquire.
Can we just briefly talk about it? Like, I love Studio Ghibli. That's good for me, good for everybody else. But they don't make it easy to get tickets online.
No.
They really don't. And part of me understands why. They want it to be... They want this
special.
Special. And that's the feeling you get when you go to the museum, is that they've thought about every last thing. The attention to detail is second to none. It is not a theme park, And even the
it's an experience.
It's an experience.
I've never been.
It's a museum that is trying to teach you about the nature of animation. Mm. It doesn't have English signage, which I sort of loved, actually, because it made it more special. There's this, you know what a zoetrope is? It's a sort of early form of animation, you might say, where the classic one is a horse.
Oh, right, yeah.
And you can see the legs moving. And so it's spinning around and around. But because it's Studio Ghibli, it's a massive one where there are like 25, 30 arms, and it's showing Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service and all these different characters from all these different movies all moving along in this fascinating flipbook brought to life. I can't do it justice, and I can't show you photographs because you're not allowed to take photographs inside the Studio Ghibli Museum.
Really?
It's another reason why it feels so special and why it feels like a pilgrimage for film fans like myself. You get to go there, and only you have the memories. You and the friends you went with or friends that have been there before.
Mm.
It's got a great gift shop, don't get me wrong, and there's a cat bus.
And it's quite cheap to go.
Yeah, it's really not that expensive.
About $5.
And if you do want the theme park, there's one, I think it's in Osaka or near it. Maybe it's Nagoya. Maybe it's Nagoya. But even that isn't like a roller coaster ride.
What is your favourite Ghibli film, if you have one?
The one you can choose. I've been thinking of a lot is Kiki's Delivery Service.
Mm.
I found myself retreating to it or returning to it when I was having a stressful day last year. And I just went, I find this so sweet and heartwarming. And actually, at the end, kind of thrilling in its own way. Yes, it's about a girl who's a witch who can fly and ride a broom, sure.
You can relate to that.
Of course, we all can. We all can. She's got a talking cat. You know, these are all things that really mean a lot to us.
My cat talks to me.
Yeah, and you talk
to
him.
Very annoying.
But I really like Kiki and a lot of the merchandise I've been buying. And I've been buying a lot of merchandise as I've been walking around Tokyo and elsewhere. Obviously, Totoro is going to be close to my heart. Spirited Away is a big one too. But Kiki, I think increasingly, I don't know. We have phases. Oh, you know, you might say your favourite film of all time might be X. One day it might be Jaws. And then 2 weeks later you go, actually, it's another Steven Spielberg movie. It's Jurassic Park. But the Ghibli Museum does live up to expectations. If you're tempted to go, make the effort. I just wish you luck on the website. They don't make it easy. And can I say, I think they want there to always be a certain number of tickets that are for Japanese.
Probably, yeah. Because I got your ticket through the Japanese website service, I think, yeah.
And that was helpful because it can just be tricky. But that was really special for me, really lived up to expectations. If you get to the top, it's the only place you can take a photograph. They have the robot soldier from Castle in the Sky on the roof, and that's where you'll see a lot of photographs of people posing by there. Otherwise, you ain't getting a snap with nobody, and Miyazaki isn't walking around saying, "Hey guys, who wants a selfie with me?" That's my impression. But that was a big part of coming here, and also going round Golden Guy and those areas just feel like Blade Runner. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember listening to a podcast you did about Blade Runner about a year ago when I was moving to Tokyo, and I was listening to your episode while driving through Tokyo at night. It was kind of like listening about Blade Runner, looking at a very Blade Runner-esque sort of scenery. It's got to the point where I've been criticised for saying Tokyo looks like Blade Runner because people don't think it does, or they think it's a sort of lazy trope. But visually, it's still very similar.
Yeah.
I mean, the opening of Blade Runner looks like a street corner in sort of Shinjuku.
Completely.
And that's what this is modelled on here, this bar. But yeah.
I told you before, I was really glad it was raining. When I had bad jet lag...
Yes, Shinjuku in the rain. Can't be beat.
I mean, that's the magic of Japan, really. You can have terrible weather and you're still like, wow.
No, yeah, Shinjuku in the rain is so damn cool. It really is.
Like tears in the rain.
No, dear.
I said it. I should have said tear in the rain, but it'll be fine.
But it's cool. While you've been here, obviously, what's been going on and what's finished is Shogun. And it's been one of the most talked about TV shows in a long time. Annoyingly, people keep referring it to Game of Thrones. I feel like a very different thing.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Because it's kind of annoying. And it's like, I don't see why. Maybe there's a bit of political intrigue, you know. It's not a comparison that needs to be made.
It oversimplifies the fact that this is based on a book and based in history.
Yes.
Because they obviously change characters.
So Shogun is almost, like a historical retelling of what happened during the Warring States period, with a few names changed and a few other things changed, of course. But yeah, a lot of it is rooted in fact, and Toranaga is the character. Toranaga is Tokugawa Ieyasu, essentially. Yeah, what do you think of Shogun?
Well, before I answer that, I want to say very clearly that we won't have any spoilers for Shogun. If you're 8 episodes in, it is a mini series. It's 10 episodes long. It's available in the UK on Disney Plus, but it's an FX Hulu joint, and as such, it's for adults. It's bloody.
Yeah.
And sweary and grown up.
Well, I think that's where the comparisons to Game of Thrones come in. People are like, wow, it's gory like Game of Thrones.
People are competing over the chance to be shogun or to control Japan when there's this young heir, and ultimately it's these five regents who are overseeing the country as it stands at that point, and whether you could possibly, one of the characters could become shogun. It is Game of Thrones-y-ish. What it isn't is promiscuous nudity.
Yeah,
nor is it violent bloodletting for no particular reason. Everything has a reason. Everything is thought through. Everything is precise. Yes, it was shot in Canada. I think the woman, the lady, the actress...
I noticed it was shot in Canada from like the opening shots because I could tell from the foliage. Wait a minute, there's nowhere in Japan that
those
looks like...
trees
looks like British Columbia. But they faithfully rebuilt the villages, the interiors... It does sort of look like what you'd expect. And there's a real... The attention to detail is really impressive.
The costuming. I've read articles I never thought I'd ever read about Japanese 16th century costuming and how it was brought to life. And I'm not going to remember everybody's name. I was struggling to bring to my mind Anna Sawai's name. She is the one that we're all in love with. She plays... Is it Mariko-sama?
Mariko, yeah.
She... is the beating heart of the show. That's a very cliched way of describing it, but she is so important in the book. And it is based on a book, James Clavell, I think you pronounce it, from the 70s. I've said to many people, it's the book that would be on many dads' bookshelves. Sort of guaranteed, big, thick book with, you know, a katana on the side. It's already been made into a TV show before, and it's not a remake. It's sort of its own retelling of the thing.
Because the original Shogun was sort of aimed more at Western audience, and there was like no Japanese in it, or it's limited.
Whereas this one has as much Japanese as you could possibly dream of. Now, I can't speak to whether the accents were perfect, or that the sort of Shakespearean style slowness of the dialogue.
I still maintain whoever got Cosmo Jarvis to play that character was just like, can you speak like the Guy Connor from YouTube.
As soon as you said it, I started hearing him, and it sort of ruined the final episode for me. I'm joking. It made it better,
Connor. Because Cosmo Jarvis does not sound like the cat he plays.
No.
He's like slightly middle Britain, North Britain. He's made his voice a lot deeper, more booming, more like Connor.
It's more staccato. He sort of does a lot of this and then speaks a lot like that.
He's wearing contact lenses as well in the show. It's making him have like blue eyes.
I think it's a really tough sell, that character, because it isn't about him, but the world revolves around him as a pawn. He's your in, he's your sort of audience substitute, but it isn't actually about a lot of the decisions he makes. It's other people making the big decisions.
Yeah, and I think that was really important to get. I think I haven't seen the original one, but I think that was a problem with the old one that they wanted to address. That
bit too white.
Really? Yeah. I mean, it's not The Last Samurai where it's like Tom Cruise will teach the Japanese their own ways before everybody dies, and only Tom Cruise can save the day, and like it. Yeah.
Can we both...
I actually quite like The Last Samurai.
I was going to say, let's quickly jump in.
It's a guilty pleasure. It's a good film.
I had it said to me...
But it is the most, like, white saviour-esque kind of... It's hard to get around it.
I will say that it does have something very special when you look back on that era. The film came out, Last Samurai...
2003.
Right, so 21
shot
years
New
ago.
Zealand as well. And all shot in New Zealand. All good Japanese films are shot in...
Not in Japan. Yeah, because Japan is too full of things that are happening.
Yeah.
It does have one of the last battles... if not the last series of battles, in camera, on the big screen. So they shot the battles without...
With Ken Watanabe when they're charging it.
Right. Without the use of an abundance of CGI, it's people having at each other in a field. And if I were commissioning that today, it wouldn't feature that many real humans. It would be a lot of humans, but naturally, in order to portray the scope and the number of people that you wanted to put on screen, it wouldn't be done in camera. And if you rewatch The Last Samurai, I want you to savour that as one of the last moments of seeing that sort
big
of
scale
almost,
battle.
Yeah, sort of like Ben Hur style. Nope, what you're seeing is what happened.
Mm. And Shogun, you know, I did see the CGI a lot, obviously, yeah. but it never detracted from the show in any way. I think because the narrative was strong, the performances were strong, and it, you know, people often overlook CGI when they enjoy the film, right?
Yes, and they love
TV show.
The story and the pacing, and I found it very romantic. Particularly towards the end, I found it very genuinely... It sort of made my heart full, and I found myself really getting quite caught up in it. Mm. And again, no spoilers here, but there is a romance at the heart of this.
Yeah.
And also there is obviously the sort of backstabbing and who's going to come out on top, but... It's a fascinating...
It's like Game of Thrones.
It's a bit like Game of Thrones. It also has history. Cannons and the Portuguese and the trading and...
Those damn Portuguese.
And the Catholicism and the mixture of Shinto and Buddhism. And it's all genuinely one of those shows that you find yourself going onto Wikipedia immediately afterwards and going...
Yeah, yeah.
So who is the real person and what actually happened?
It's a fascinating part of Japanese history, actually.
It's just...
It made me want to dig deeper into it, too. And also the story of...
Unjin-sama.
Like, you know, it's based on a real...
Unjin is unemployed.
It's based on a real man, William Adams, from Kent, like myself, who I've rabbited on about before.
He's a fascinating guy. He was sending money back to his family.
Rightly so.
But never ended up, you know, he's...
I used my bank. He used a letter that probably took 2 years to reach. It took him 2 years to get to Japan from the UK.
Do you think he complained about having to use the little stamp as much in the bank?
Hanko stamp. Mm. Fucking hell, oh God, yeah.
I shouldn't have brought it up.
But like, yeah, I mean, his story is fascinating. There's a really good book called Samurai William, that I highly recommend reading. I've always talked about doing like a documentary on it, but I don't know.
After Shogun?
I should, yeah. I get Connor to just be Samurai William in the way that and just get him bumbling around. It'd be kind of cool.
Oh my God, I would like to see that now. I don't think we could, either of us can recommend the show highly enough.
And also, I mean, obviously the finale's over now, but... I think we both liked the finale. I saw that some reviews are a bit mixed, but mostly on the good, erring on the good side. It's not a Game of Thrones ending.
It absolutely worked for me.
Yeah, it worked for me as well.
I think once you get to episode 9, you're invested and you're happy with sort of, shall we say, more dialogue-heavy finale than most. I'll also add that there are a few people that weren't aware that this was a mini-series based on a book. And when it's a book and it's based in part on history, you can't necessarily hope for series 2 or 3 or 4. I like it for being what it is. And who knows what they might do? They might think of clever ways of doing a Shogun spin-off. I hope they don't. But this show, I think, is special for me because it is a 10-episode treat.
Why do you not want a spin-off? Why are you so against this spin-off? Because it's sort of wrapped up nice in a bundle.
Because it is based on a classic, dare I say it, book, and they'd be sort of stretching it. I think you'd be getting into sort of...
I think if you did it, you would need complete different cast of characters.
Absolutely. Different time periods. Maybe not vastly different, but...
Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to see more shows and films set in Japan. And I know Tokyo Vice... I haven't watched the new series of Tokyo Vice. Did you ever watch season 1?
No, I did not.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And... yeah, I'd like to dig into season 2 of that.
You were telling me something really interesting when we were going up the Nakasendo Trail as concerns Tokyo Vice, which is that in order to shoot streets in Japan, you need to get approval from every business affected that's going to even be slightly in shot. And yes. I think, obviously, there are versions of that in the UK, but it sounds like it's much more complicated here.
It's an absolute nightmare. Like I really want to find out what happened with Ridley Scott when he was making Black Rain. Film in Osaka, because he famously left Japan as like, I'm never filming there again. And he didn't, as far as I know. But yeah, no, season 2 of Tokyo Vice, I haven't seen it yet, but I know there's a scene that was shot here in Tokyo, and they wanted to film on this popular nightlife strip in Akasaka, so really, you know, in the heart of Tokyo, near Shibuya. And the police, you have to go to the police in Japan to get permission, and they said you have to ask all 300 shops on this street for permission to film, because it's going to affect the business, right? And so the businesses have to be like, thumbs
I guess
up.
So, yeah.
And they did it. They had like a team of people go to every single business. And the way you do it in Japan is you have to give like a gift, a present. They went in, they were like, oh, Sumimasen, we're going to be filming. Here's a gift. If you have any concerns, they got all 300 businesses to agree to this filming for a few hours
mind-boggling
on the street. But that's like one of the reasons people don't film here. I don't know why they didn't do Shogun here. I guess because they needed to construct an entire kind of medieval Japanese, you know, 16th century
ships
town.
And docks and like, gates. A lot of Japanese stuff is burnt down.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. In our daily lives, we all carry around with us different stressors. They can be big, they can be small, and sometimes we might not even realize that we're carrying them around with us. But if these feelings stay bottled up, they can start to affect us negatively, which is why having a positive outlet for discussion can be such a valuable tool for your well-being. Therapy can be a perfect outlet for your inner stressors. It's a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Sometimes just speaking things out into the open can be such a great release of inner tension, so you can spend less time stressing about the issue and more time figuring out how you can overcome it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Yeah, and I don't know where they could have filmed what they did, because most of Japan's coastline is concreted up with barriers and walls to stop tsunamis. So, yeah, I can't blame them for doing it in Canada.
And they had to be so careful and they were so precise about getting the details right that they must have thought, you know what, we might as well sort of begin again and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Because then we could be really in control over the costume, the lighting, the sunsets, the trees, perhaps not. Mm. But elements of it that they could control, they probably went, oh, we got enough on our plates. And again, so much of it is actually in Japanese, and I love a show in subtitles, and it really brings me in, because it forces you to get off your phone.
Yeah.
He says, looking at Perfect Days on his phone, because I want to tell you that that's a movie from Wim Wenders that came out last year. It's about a toilet attendant.
I've heard so much about this.
It's so good. It's seemingly quite dull.
Tell us about Perfect Day. A friend of mine came over and took a photo of a toilet that I know well because I filmed a video there. It's the one that's like goes transparent in Shibuya. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, there's a film called Perfect Days I've watched recently. It's very popular. It's won lots of awards. And it's about a toilet man. Toilet cleaning dude.
They should have called it Toilet Man.
Toilet Man.
They should have called it Toilet Man.
Not Perfect Days.
It's a series of stories focused around this one character played by Koji Yakusho, whose name I'm sure I've not done justice to. And he is a methodical planner, and he has a day, and it starts when the light comes in through the blinds, and he gets up and he gets in his van, he goes to the local vending machine, he gets out his coffee, and he starts his day, and he goes and cleans toilets. And you're thinking, Ali, this sounds like the most boring film of all time. It's not, because there's this charm to it. It's this, there's a Japanese-ness to it as he's driving his K car van with the yellow plates around Tokyo, going from public restroom to public restroom. and he is interacting with other people, and it feels like you're seeing another side of Japan that you don't often watch.
Yeah, I read a review about this film, and I heard that it's almost like a meditative experience, right?
I said, and this is going to date me, but do you remember in the 90s, if your computer was running slow, you'd defragment it?
I do remember, yeah.
You do remember that. And it would just go brick by brick, beep, boop, beep, boop, and just sort out all of your... memory. It felt like that. It felt like you were resetting your own mind just watching.
But is there any sort of drama or friction in there?
There is.
Because all films need some contention, some sort of, you know, conflict.
There is drama and friction. It's family stuff. Why has he ended up being such a hermit?
Right.
And who are the people that still want to be in touch with him? Who does he find himself bonding with? Who does he meet on his repetitive daily treks? There is plenty there. No, it's not Shogun. No, it's not. There aren't, you know, who's going to be the new chief toilet attendant? You know, that's not happening. No one is after him.
I do watch that. That'd be fun.
I need your job. I want your
battle for the finest toilet in Tokyo.
If you don't clean that toilet properly, you have to take your own life. No, none of that happens, but it is a gorgeous, bizarre film. It introduced me to the idea of the Japanese recycling thing, where there are shops that have old cassettes from the 1980s.
Yeah,
that are traded and obsessed over and loved in a way that only Japan really would. And he still listens to the same tapes in this K-car van over and over and over. Mm. And that music is really well chosen. He loves Western songs, and it's just such a treat. Again, it's called Perfect Days, and if it's passed you by, do check it out. And then you will find yourself, like our mutual friend, going around Tokyo...
cleaning toilets. He doesn't even live there. He's from the UK.
I'm not taking any photographs. I just want to clean up. They just look like a really good time.
I mean, there's a lot of good drama films that come out of Japan, like Shoplifters a few years ago. It's pretty good. Tokyo Sonata. Not a lot of people have seen that one, but that really was a very impressive film.
And then you've got
film.
The classics of classics, like Seven Samurai and Tokyo Story, which require quite a lot of homework in advance, but... you know, I really enjoyed coming here and feeling like I could tick through some homework, movies that I hadn't seen yet.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about Tampopo?
Tampopo, the dandelion, the ramen western.
The spaghetti but ramen western, which, again, our mutual friend Sam was like, oh, you got to watch it if you've not watched
it. I mean, this is a film I rabbit on about quite a bit over the year. I haven't talked about it more recently, so, yeah, maybe some of you guys might not have heard about it. But Tampopo is a really good film, made by Juzo Itami, really witty director. And
so much energy.
Yeah, it's a very original, energetic film, quite surreal at times. And yes, it's a ramen western, like a spaghetti western, you know, the cowboy comes to town and shit goes down. It's set up exactly like that. Two cowboys, in this case truck drivers, come into this ramen shop and the woman's getting bullied and beaten around and they want to turn the ramen shop around and save her business.
Because her broth isn't good enough.
Her broth is shit.
Her noodles are cooked too much.
Yeah, I think she's like a single woman trying to run this ramen shop with her kid, and the truck drivers come to the rescue, one of which is Ken Watanabe.
A friend of yours.
My best friend in the world. And it was really cool sitting with Ken Watanabe on the bit of grass looking over a wonderful bay, just chatting about Tampopo on and off camera. I was really impressed, actually, because I said to him, Tampopo's one of my favourite, possibly is my favourite Japanese film. And he was like, a lot of people love Tampopo and know about it. Which kind of shocked me, because I felt like it had always gone under the radar. And Juzo Itami, you know, he's made some really good films. There's one called Mimbo, which is a really good one. The Art of Extortion. It's about a hotel that gets extorted by Yakuza. But he often took the piss out of the Yakuza, and it said they killed him in the 90s. He came off a roof one day. He was speculated that it was suicide, but like it sounded like the Yakuza basically forced him off a roof.
Wow.
And yeah, really dark stuff. Really sad.
Which is in direct contrast to the likes of Tampopo. Sorry.
Yeah.
Which is so energetic. It fully loves Western cinema and uses Western cinema tropes with gleeful effect. There's a bizarre bit that I'm sure you'll have talked about a lot where it's a sort of sexy interlude that gets flashed into the film four or five times where a couple are having an affair.
Yeah, there's the film, the narrative, but then, yeah, they've got these interludes, these short stories, right?
That just have people essentially, you know, having a great time, but with food, and some of the food they're eating off each other
Each story is kind of like a vignette about the experience we have with food, right?
It is such a bizarre treat. It is hard to get a hold of. I couldn't find it through sort of downloading, purchasing iTunes type. I had to
borrow it, like the actual disc.
A DVD.
A DVD,
my goodness.
Ruddy D. But it was well worth it. Can I also just, whilst I remember, shout out a Netflix animated series, which I don't think you've seen, called Blue Eye Samurai.
I have not.
Which is also set in a sort of Portuguese Western gun trading era of Japan. And it's about, some might say it's a Mulan story, but that's very derivative and simplistic. But it's about a female Ronin.
Okay.
Who's passing for a male Ronin, a samurai, no master, who feels no obligation to do the right thing because it's her mission to find out who her father is. And it's one of three Westerners who assaulted her mother. And she is this half Western, half Japanese, blue-eyed samurai.
Mm.
And she's a gifted fighter, and the visuals are incredible. The blood spray and the blades, and she's facing off against dozens upon dozens of people. Great twists and turns.
Do you watch it with subtitles or dubbing?
It's dubbed. It is a Western show.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it's a French show. The people I know in the UK who are into this sort of thing, they've all seen it. It's a massive sensation.
Yeah, I know a few friends have seen it. A friend of mine who's a fighter, Nick Pettas, he's called the Blue Eye Samurai here. He's got blue eyes. And
well,
he's
there
a
is.
Karate fucking kickboxing mega champion.
I won't say too much more about it other than it's an absolute treat. It's on Netflix and it is super watchable. I was four episodes in going, oh no, I've only got six left. And that's a fun feeling. That feeling of, oh, I've got to eke this out. And I think, dear Netflix, I would have enjoyed it even more if it had been like Shogun, episode by episode. Because that
weekly that's something we talked about, right?
Installment is...
I actually think that's a... I think if I was ever going to make a series, I would deliver it weekly rather than all at once.
Mm.
It really did add something to Shogun. It made it like an experience because everyone's watching it each week.
We were texting
in.
About it.
Yeah, I think that's way better. And also you remember it. It feels more substantial. Like, it felt like quite a substantial, chunky series in a way that it wouldn't when you say, I don't know, like Black Mirror, where you just binge the whole anthology in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, and then you forget half what happened anyway. Like, I think it is the way to go, releasing it every week.
If it's an adult show for adults, at the risk of being too patronising, too late, it encourages you to savour it. I was looking forward to every Tuesday when
it
dropped.
And you reflect on what you just watched.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a show about looks and glances and smiles and decisions and these brief little thing, little micro moments. And that deserves an episode, week by week, episode by episode release. Also, before we forget, before I forget, before we run out of time, can we talk a bit about Godzilla Minus One?
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
And there we go, guys. Our thoughts on a movie that came out late last year in the UK. Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, I was really... I don't like kaiju movies.
Is this because of Pacific Rim?
It's okay. But like, I feel like it's like children's stuff. Because they... And certainly in the Western Godzilla films, it's all a bit like...
Matthew Broderick in New York.
Yeah, what a film that was. But, like, even in the sort of more recent ones, like Gareth Edwards did, the first one. It
2014,
was right.
That was.
It was okay. The one after that was horrific. One of the worst films I've ever seen. But, I just not into it. So it was refreshing to see Godzilla portrayed in a way that was kind of scary. And terrifying.
Genuinely an absolute nature-based angry threat. Like a guttural scream, like a proper vengeful angry burst of just... You are scared of this Godzilla. You said it yourself. And when it reveals...
Well, they don't hold back from showing him killing people in a way that's like...
The atomic breath is like, oh, shit.
That's right. It's brutal at times, isn't it? And I think it needs a fucking monster the size of a skyscraper. And I think that's often lost in a lot of Godzilla films.
It's too squishy and cuddly and has too many personalities. Oh, he's actually just wants to be helpful.
Right.
Oh, he really wants... this is set in the 40s, and it's about a kamikaze pilot who ends up not dying, right? And as a result...
He was scared of being a kamikaze pilot.
Yeah, and it was like the final few days of the war. And he pretends like his plane has a mechanical issue. And he comes down, this is the first scene, comes down into this island, lands the plane, and the mechanics are looking at it. And out of the blue, just by chance, angry, beastly, guttural, raw Godzilla comes out of the water and just slaps them down.
And they film it so well.
So good.
I think...
Scale.
I think one reason it works so well is often in previous Godzilla films, the camera's quite objective, whereas this, it was subjective. You're seeing it, Godzilla, from the perspective of the people on the ground, right, looking up. You're sort of there on the ground with them. And from that angle, Godzilla is a terrifying presence.
He's a giant lizard who wants to squish you, burn you alive.
How do people forget that when they're making a Godzilla film, though? How do people forget that?
They are like 38 movies in. This is from Toho Studios. It's a Japanese production. It's about survivor's guilt. And the reason why good Godzilla movies are good is because you really bond with the human beings.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll admit, the ending's not perfect. And there's some bits at the end I was like, no, don't do that. But really good film. And also...
there's some use of silence in it. It's just... outstanding, and the music's good generally.
It's very good, but just the fact it's like an art house film in terms of the budget and the way it was made.
Such a small budget, and we can say it's an Oscar-winning Godzilla movie.
Fuck, I forgot that. Yeah,
because the VFX won at the Oscars this year, and that genuinely makes me so happy.
There's 35 people in a room down the road. I can tell. So, like, you know, you're used to like the Marvel credits coming up and 6,000 visual effects artists. This is like 35 people.
Completely. It reminds me of Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was the kind of movie where they put a camera on an office chair, covered it with sellotape, and then shoved it down a corridor. Because that's what they had. They couldn't... it was make, do, and mend. It was sort of bodging it, but par excellence. And this wasn't quite that level, but the budget was extraordinarily low compared to what they'd splash on...
For minus one, I think it was $10 million.
Wow.
Or, you know, which is bonkers. And I remember watching a behind-the-scenes feature on how it was made. And there's a lot of boats in the film.
Lots of water.
Sea.
Yeah.
And they only had one piece of this boat they could shoot. And they had that. That was the boat. There was like 25 boats. They had just that.
Yeah,
and they use green screen and clever ways of doing it.
I also just think it's a fascinating part of history, and part of the reason why they called it minus one is because you can interpret it many ways, but it's essentially saying this is the prehistory of Godzilla. The first Godzilla film, I think, came out in 1953, whereas this film is set before even then. And it making it about survivor's guilt, making it about post-war Japan and trying to rebuild.
It was a smart idea.
It's a really, really interesting part of Japanese history for many obvious reasons. And again, you want to go straight down that Wikipedia rabbit hole and find out more about the actual truth of what Japan was like in the rubble, people making friends with people who live next door because they're the ones that also had survived. It's a really good movie. It may have passed you by. This may have all been old news to you, but Godzilla Minus One is something I'm excited almost to hear that people haven't seen, because I get to go, oh my god.
Yeah, and presumably there must be a sequel.
Godzilla Minus Half.
Godzilla Plus Six.
Godzilla Zero.
There will be, I think there must be a sequel.
It's worth considering. Unlike Shogun, I wouldn't be upset if they gave me another one, but I don't know
but
how.
But you need another story to build around a character to make it work. I encourage you guys to watch it about a month ago. That's our second chance. Go and check it out now. But for now, thank you so much, Ali, for joining us on the podcast. We cover a lot of ground, and sad to see you leave Japan and go back to the land of disappointment and pessimism.
The land of the
rising,
falling clouds. No, it's going to be all right. I tell you what, I have fully run out of clothes. I am now wearing. You won't be able to see this, obviously, on the podcast, but I'm wearing dark blue on dark blue on dark blue because that's what I've got left. So, this is just what I'm telling myself. When I put on the third load of washing when I get home, I'll be crying my eyes out. It's been amazing, and thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh.
And thank you for having me full stop.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Hope to see you again soon.
You surely will.
But thanks for watching, guys, as always, or listening, if you're listening. And we'll see you next week when Pete Dawson returns for the Born Japan podcast. Bye for now. Have a good one.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.